Hello and welcome into another episode of Podcast 63. So this episode of Podcast 63 is going to be unlike the other ones. This is the first edition of a special edition of Podcast 63. This week, we already have an episode that was posted earlier today on Monday. In addition to that episode, we now have this episode, which, as you will come to listen to and find out, is an interview with Jesse Kramer of the Catch and Shoot. These episodes will be very irregular. This is the first installment of the series. I felt like it didn't align with our weekly podcast or the And One podcast, so we're just going to make it its own series. I think of the special edition podcast as any interviews, any breaking news, or any topic or idea that we want to post about that may not come out on a weekly time scale. So thank you for tuning into the first ever special edition episode of Podcast 63, and we hope you like it.
He passes out to Hunter. Hunter shoots off the rim. Brown gets it, scores. It's over. It's over. We won. We won the ball game. Viola won the ball game. Oh, we won 60-58.
All right, so I'm going to have a special guest for this week's special episode. Joining the podcast today, I have Jesse Kramer of the Catch and Shoot. Jesse covers a lot of, actually all of the college basketball teams in the state of Illinois, including our Loyola Ramblers, but also a few teams from the Missouri Valley Conference, as well as some of the big names like DePaul and Northwestern. So Jesse, if you wouldn't mind, introducing yourself a little bit, and letting our, listeners know what you're all about.
Yeah. Hey, Podcast 63 Nation. Good to be here. Thanks for having me on. I started covering Loyola when they moved into the Valley when I was a student at Northwestern on the Catch and Shoot, which was my own blog that I started up, and had a really good time covering Loyola as well as the other schools in the Chicago area, and every now and then venturing out all over the Midwest to see what Division One hoops had to offer out there. Cause I'm an East Coast guy, and it was fun to kind of see some new teams and new programs and what, all these fan bases and programs are about. So, even though I'm back on the East Coast these days, since I graduated from school 2 years ago, it's still a lot of fun for me to keep up with Loyola and Chicago and everything that's going on there. Still tweet up a storm. If you follow me at Catch and Shoot on Twitter, you'll see that I still tweet plenty about what's going on over there and follow very closely. So I'm excited to talk some Loyola hoops today.
Cool. Thank you. Thanks for giving us a little insight about your background, basketball knowledge. So on the minds of many of listeners, Loyola fans everywhere, has to be the impending NIT tournament, which we covered a little bit. Lou and I did earlier on a podcast today. But I also want to get your opinion, as far as just kind of like general thoughts on the NIT tournament, maybe a little bit about Loyola's draw coming up with our first round matchup against Creighton. And then maybe just like a couple teams in the NIT tournament that you think could, take the whole thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, people kind of look down at the NIT, and obviously I get why it is the, you know, the second rate tournament to the NCAA tournament. There's no doubt about that, but you know, it's still basketball in March. It's still fun to play in it. It's still fun to watch. Anytime you're playing basketball this time of year, it's a good thing. And I kind of like that. It seems like the Loyola fan base, they like could have gotten spoiled after last year's run and then winning a conference title and expecting to win Arch Madness again this year. But it seems like they kind of taken in stride that, considering where this program was just a couple of years ago, the fact that they're playing postseason basketball for the second straight year, that they won back-to-back regular season titles, and they're, you know, still getting to play basketball in March. It's a fun thing. It seems like Loyola fans appreciate that, and that from what I've seen from the players, it seems like they appreciate the opportunity to keep playing too. I mean, I think Loyola did get a tough draw. I kind of tweeted about this at one point when the bracket came out, but right, I think Creighton is they have a tough home court. It's a team that is, I don't want to say they're young because they have a lot of juniors, but they don't have any seniors who get big minutes. So I feel like they could take this as an opportunity where they see it as a chance. You know, if we make an NIT run, it could be a way to build onto maybe being a top 25 team next season. So I don't feel like Creighton's the type of power conference team who's going to come into this like we sometimes see and kind of not really care about playing in the NIT and maybe flop. I feel like they're going to probably come out to play a legitimate game and give Loyola a good fight. And then even if Loyola were to get past Creighton, Memphis is another really tough home court if they were to get Memphis in the second round. So it's a tough draw. I think Loyola is tough enough where like they're not going to be crazy underdogs in either of those games or against really anyone in the tournament. I think they could win any game, but I would say that it would be surprising if they win. I would give them, you know, like maybe a 30-35% chance against Creighton, and then I'd be kind of surprised they won more than one game in the tournament.
Yeah, definitely. I just so you know, I filled out my NIT bracket, and of course I had to pick Loyola going the whole way because, you know, we hear
63. I can't blame you.
The whole way, you know, 100%. My co-host did have he had him just winning two games against Creighton to start with, and then he picked the upset in San Diego and then had us beating San Diego. But yeah, realistically, I mean, you know, it is a tough draw. I think Creighton is a good team as far as I've watched a little bit of tape on them. You know, their big guy Crumple is very athletic, which we saw last year gave Krutwig some problems. But a team that relies a lot on the three ball and does that very well, you know, they have three shooters shooting over 40%. So yeah. Yeah,
and I think, you know, Loyola at times, three-point defense has been a struggle for them. Last year, not as much, and that was one of the differences between this year and last year. I think last year, if I remember correctly, they're actually really good defending threes and didn't give up a lot. This year, that's been more of a struggle, so it's certainly something, if Creighton has a hot shooting night, that could be pretty bad for the Ramblers.
Yeah, and then just in addition to, like, Loyola's draw, who, as far as, like, the NIT as a whole, what teams are you looking at? Maybe two teams that could win the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, I really like UNC Greensboro. I was hoping they would be in the NCAA tournament, and they, since they were the first team out, they would have been if Oregon hadn't beaten Washington in the Pac-12 tournament. But, you know, they have some really good pieces, and I definitely think that they're going to be out to prove something as a team that really they think they should have gotten in, and SoCon as a conference really thinks they should have gotten at least two bids with how strong the league was this year. I could definitely see Indiana making a run. Like, you don't really know with them because they've had their ups and downs this year, but they finished pretty strong and they did beat some really good teams. Like, they swept Michigan State. They could, I don't know statistically, I haven't really looked into who the statistical favorite is, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was, if Indiana is at least one of, you know, the two or three teams that is statistically favored to win. Like, I feel like them and Clemson, I know they're in the same region as a 1 and 2. I feel like those are probably two of the better, most talented teams, at least. They didn't perform so great against, Indiana got some good wins. Clemson didn't get many good wins this year in a lot of opportunities, which is why they end up not only getting snubbed, but not even being on the one seed line in the NIT. But I think those are both some very talented teams that I would be, you know, you never know what's going to happen in the NIT. They're all, it's such a crapshoot. Anybody can make it to the Garden. But in that region, I would kind of be surprised if you don't get Indiana or Clemson, the 1 or 2 seed, making it out.
Yeah, definitely. There are some talented teams. I mean, I know I read, I think there's a bunch of 20 plus win teams, which is always exciting to see. You know, you got your mix of good mid-major teams and a few high major teams that, you know, had tougher schedules and lost a bunch of games, but made it because they had those quality wins, such as like the Indiana or Texas as well. So, I mean, that's pretty much all I want to talk about as far as like the NIT goes. I'm excited, especially because it's tomorrow. That, you know, it's always the tough part is that you get your draw and then you want to watch the games right away. So it's going to be an exciting time. Exciting time to watch the game tomorrow. But switching gears now, talking about Loyola's season as a whole, as like someone coming from the outside, someone who's not as emotionally attached to the team, such as me or my co-host, do you consider Loyola's season a success? Or do you think that they missed out on a good season? What is your interpretation of their season as a whole?
Yeah, well, I think it's a kind of tricky, nuanced question, because I think there's no question that they fell short of expectations. I think you can't really deny that. I don't just mean, like, some people had crazy high expectations for them. I know some people put Loyola in their preseason top 10 and stuff like that. I don't think reasonably you could have expected Loyola to be that good. But I mean, Loyola could have legitimately been a top 50 team this year, a top 75 team at least. And they weren't. And I know obviously Lucas Williamson's injury played a big role in that. But still, even when Williamson was healthy, they didn't do anything particularly of note. They obviously did still win a conference title, though. And I think what you're going to talk about, if the season's a success, when you're talking about Loyola Chicago, who up until last year hadn't won a conference title in more than 30 years, if you're going to win a conference title, no matter what the other circumstances are surrounding it, that's going to be a good season for you at this stage of the program's growth. So, you know, I would say overall, yeah, I guess it's a success, but you know, I think they definitely could have been better. I think part of it is just they came back down to earth. They probably, you know, maybe outplayed how good they actually were to a certain extent last year. I don't mean to say they weren't good. They were definitely a really good team, but they weren't one of the four best teams in college basketball, even though they were playing in the Final Four. They were Cinderella, who got hot at the right time and played really good basketball. But I think part of it was people may have gotten their hopes up a little too high, but part of it is that they did, you know, just struggle a little bit and struggle more than I think we expected when they lost those three seniors from last year's team. I think people kind of knew how much they would miss Dante Ingram and Ben Richardson. I think people kind of underrated how much they would miss Andre Jackson, because he was a guy who could beat you outside, could beat you inside, could post up, could take you off the dribble to a certain extent. And I know he wasn't the best defensive player, but in some ways he was their best all-around offensive player last year along with Custer. And I think people kind of missed it, myself included, missed out on how much they would miss him. And I think that was a big part of their struggles this year.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head as far as missing the seniors, as far as that goes. Yeah, we've talked about it a few times here, like how much Andre meant to the team. To have a guy who, you know, could play the four, especially because that's what Porter wants. He wants a four man who can shoot the ball, kind of be, you know, can handle the ball to some extent. And Ugwuoke was just not that guy. Like, he's nowhere close to the player that Jackson was. And, you know, he's still got two full years left, so maybe he'll get there at some point. At least maybe he'll develop his outside shot. But as of right now, you know, I think this team definitely outplayed their margins a little bit towards the end of the season. And then, yeah, missing the senior leaders for sure. Yeah. So going forward with this team into next year, what's something that is very promising and could lead to success for this team? And then on the flip side, what is something that is the most nerve-wracking about the Loyola team next year?
Yeah, so I mean, I think in terms of promising things, you've got one of, if not the best duo in the Valley for next year in Cameron Crutwig and Lucas Williamson. You know, I still think, no disrespect to Marcus Towns, like, I don't think he was a bad pick at all for MVC Player of the Year. Perfectly valid pick, but I personally, if I still had my vote like I did a few years ago in the Valley award voting, I would have taken Cameron Crutwig. And I think he'll be the preseason player of the year next year, and he'll be the favorite to win that award. But and then you also have Lucas Williamson, who looked pretty good. Like, people thought he could have a breakout year this year, and he looked like he was headed there if he didn't face those injury issues. So if he can get a healthy year ahead of him, he could also be a guy who's a first teamer, at least a second teamer. And you know, and then you add in another really good recruiting class. I imagine when it's all said and done, Loyola will be at least top two, if not number one, in the MVC recruiting, along with Missouri State, who's got some good guys coming in with Dana Ford. But like, they're going to have guys next year. And I think in terms of pure talent, they could be just as good as they were this year, and they won a conference title this year again, even though it wasn't the best year compared to last year. They still won a conference title, and I think there's no reason that if things work perfectly, they can't contend again. But I do think the troubling thing, to answer the other part of your question, is I'm not sure they're going to have that go-to guy that they've had the last couple of years. Like, you know, they had Marcus Towns this year. When the shot clock got down, you know, under 6-7 seconds, you knew they could go to Marcus Towns and you could probably find a way to get a pretty good look against any defense. And last year, you may not have had a go-to guy as good as Marcus Towns, but you had so many different guys who played well together that you could usually find a way to get a good shot. And you still had two guys in Clayton Custer and Andre Jackson, and sometimes Dante Ingram as well, could pretty reliably get you a solid bucket. And then, of course, before that, you had Milton Doyle for 4 years, who was also one of the better late shot clock guys in the conference. Next year, you know, you're looking at the backcourt, and the guys in the backcourt are going to be Williamson, Cooper Kafis, and the freshman Marquise Kennedy. And, you know, Williamson is a great player, but he hasn't really shown that ability to break down a defense one-on-one yet. And it's something he could develop. He definitely, I think, could get there. I don't know if he'll get there next year, though. It may take a little longer to really get to that point. And, you know, Cooper Kafis is just not that type of player. We know he's a 3-and-D type of guy, and I think he's going to stay that way at least for next year. And I know people have a lot of high hopes for Marquise Kennedy, and from the people who really know Preps basketball, they seem to really like what he can bring to Loyola, but I just would never count on a freshman to be that type of go-to guy for a legitimate conference contender. So I think that's a question for the team. I think between Williamson and if Kennedy is as good as advertised and ready to be a really key piece and average, you know, 9, 10, 11 points per game as a freshman, it may end up not being a problem. They may have two guards who can make things happen in late shot clock situations. But I do think that's going to be their biggest question mark going into next year.
Yeah, completely. I'm one of the guys that is on Marquise Kennedy's, you know, hype team, so to say. Like, I'm one of his biggest proponents, but I agree. You know, leaning on a freshman is, unless he's a five-star, you know, is never any, and even then, you know, it's never anything to hang your hat on. So yeah, like you said, like hopefully, you know, best case scenario, those two guys produce, Williamson and Kennedy. But, you know, if both of those guys can't produce, can't make their own shot, then they are going to be in a little bit of trouble next year.
Yeah, I mean, I do think the other side of it is they should be, I would think, better defensively next year than they were this year, assuming Williamson stays healthy. So they obviously want to be a good offensive team. You want to be good on both sides of the ball. But I think they could make it work, not necessarily to win the conference, but to still be, you know, in the top three, maybe, as a team that doesn't score the ball particularly well. But we've seen Porter Moser with some of his past teams really, you know, clamp down the defensive end and sort of learn how to win some low scoring, gritty, classic MVC games. And next year's team could have to be that type of team.
Yeah. And then just continuing on with this whole, you know, what the future holds. Speaking of Porter Moser, what do you think his future holds at Loyola? I personally, you know, with him having kind of mediocre success this year, don't think that he's going anywhere for next season. But in your opinion, if they have another, you know, regular season title to go along with a Arch Madness title, do you think he could potentially go anywhere in terms of high major, or maybe just a better opportunity at one of the bigger mid-major schools? What do you think about Porter's future with Loyola?
I mean, I think if Loyola were to make another NCAA tournament within the next year or two, I certainly think there could be high major programs who would want him. But I'm honestly not convinced that he would want to leave Loyola. You know, you never really know. Things can always change over time, but he is like very, very genuinely seemed to have like found a real home at Loyola. It seems to be a good professional situation for him right now. It's a good personal situation in terms of being a local guy, with his religious values too, who fits well with what the school is all about. And like right now, the program has invested resources, or the school has invested resources into the program. So this isn't the same Loyola that that he took over several years ago when he got the job. And I don't just mean because of the Final Four run. I mean, even regardless of that, before the Final Four run, when Steve Watson was hired as the new AD, like that was a big move for them. And they started investing a lot more money into the basketball program. So Loyola is a much better job than it was even just, I don't remember exactly when Watson got the job and when they started investing all that money in the program, but I don't know, 3, 4, 5 years ago, somewhere around there. So I would kind of be surprised if things didn't change for Porter, if he actually left Loyola, unless he got like a really big time offer. Like if he got, I mean, this is just throwing a random name out there for no reason, but say things went south with Bill Self at Kansas with this whole FBI investigation and Kansas opened up and for some reason Kansas thought Porter Moser was their best option. Like that is such a tough job to turn down. That's total speculation and hypothetical. I don't know if that would ever actually happen. Like if one of those true blue blood jobs opened up and they called Porter Moser, I don't know how you say no to that. But if it was a job like if DePaul opened up, I don't see why Porter would necessarily leave for DePaul when he's in a good spot at Loyola. And as I think he's said in the past, right, like his experience at Illinois State was a very formative experience for how he views his professional life. He understands that the college basketball world that he works in is one where you don't always get a fair chance, at least what he thought was a fair chance. And in that instance, I do kind of agree with him. Like he got a new AD in. He had some good players that ended up winning a lot of games after he got fired. And like, he was bitter about that for a while. And like he understands that, you know, if you're in a good situation, take advantage of that because you can get into another spot that you think is a good situation. And then things can turn very quickly against you. So because of all that, I think that I don't see any reason, unless it's a really big time job, to expect him to leave.
That's a good point as far as like his Illinois State tenure goes. He had some bad cards dealt to him as soon as the AD changed. And I'm sure, like he said, you know, it was a very formative experience for him. But that's exciting to hear. I mean, you know, I can still remember as a freshman here, you know, 4 years ago, sitting in a dining hall and having Porter run into the dining hall, stand on a table and yell at all of us like, hey, there's a game in, you know, an hour and a half or an hour or whatever, like free t-shirts, like what, you know, whatever, like trying to get any way to have students come to the games. And, you know, I also remember talking to Bruno Skokna probably like, I think same like 3 years ago. And he was wondering why no one was coming to the games and what could they do to, you know, to get more people to come to the games. And I think the response I gave Bruno and what actually ended up happening was winning games. That's what got more people to the stadium. And I'm sure and I hope that Porter realizes that, you know, he can continue to cultivate that relationship he has with the student body and also the you know, the area, the local area around Rogers Park has definitely come to enjoy their Ramblers basketball. But it's exciting to hear from an outsider's perspective too, that that he would enjoy staying, hopefully.
Yeah, and I think one of the other things to consider with him is like Loyola at this point is kind of like his baby, you know, like he really built this thing into something that, you know, at least short term has been special. And I think has the potential to be special long term is like a legitimate, you know, regular contender in the Valley, regular mid-major that, you know, they may not always make the NCAA tournament, but, you know, can at least be like a top 25 to top 40 mid-major in the country. And I do think he has a special attachment because when he got here, no one was going to the games. Like you were just saying, you know, it was an empty gym. There was no media there. Nobody really cared about Loyola basketball. And, you know, of course, last year's Final Four run made it to the point where now kind of everyone has their eye on Loyola basketball. But even just during the season last year when just the school and some local college basketball fans realized that Loyola had a good team before they knew it was going to be a Final Four Cinderella, people still took a little bit more notice. And, you know, and like he's got something there that people care about. And it's something he built. And I don't think you can underrate the fact that he takes a lot of pride in kind of owning this program.
Yeah, definitely. On the flip side, another coach at Loyola whose career seems to be coming to an end, I mean, unless something goes south, Brian Mullins, who is the associate, I believe, the associate coach, or at least the second in command to Porter here. It looks like he, as far as some reports go, is going to be replacing Barry Hinson at SIU. Nothing's been finalized. You know, Loyola is still playing basketball. So until they are no longer playing, you know, probably nothing will come out. But where do you think, do you think this is a good move for Brian? Do you think that SIU is going to be somewhere that he can go and produce quality talent? What do you think Brian Mullins' future holds as far as coaching goes?
Yeah, I mean, I think if the reporting that's come out is accurate and he is the top guy for Southern Illinois right now, I think it's a no-brainer for him to take that job. It's a pretty good job in the Valley. They've obviously had past success when he was there and before that, and when he was there as a player, I mean. And I think from what I understand of what other people around the Loyola program have said for a few years now, is he's ready for a head coaching job. I mean, he's got the tools as a recruiter. He's got the tools as an X's and O's guy. He's learned a lot in his few years working on Porter's staff at Loyola. And people even thought, you know, obviously with Hinson, there have been rumors for a few years that Southern Illinois has struggled, that last year, even the year before, he could have gotten fired. And even back then, a year or two ago, people thought that if Hinson had lost his job, then Mullins could at that point already be the first call for SIU. So that kind of shows how highly he's thought of around the league as an assistant on this Loyola staff. So, I mean, I think it definitely seems like a great move for both parties. I'm not as familiar with Southern Illinois as I am with Loyola, so it's possible I'm missing something. That's not my expertise there, but like I mean, the only thing I would say that always concerns me slightly when programs hire sort of these, you know, all-time great players, is it can then create a sticky situation if it turns out to be a bad hire. We're kind of seeing that with Illinois State right now, although we'll see if Dan Mueller can turn things back around. But, you know, a lot of the fans are kind of over Dan Mueller as a coach right now. And it's a weird situation because, you know, Dan Mueller was one of the all-time great players at Illinois State. And he has had a couple of really solid teams as a coach at Illinois State. And in the end, I think he's still, you know, a beloved figure in that program. But, you know, even if they had another year as bad as this year, next year, I don't know if they'd be ready to let him go, because it's just a little bit of a stickier situation to deal with that. But I still think, regardless of that, even though I bring it up, like, I think that this is the right move for SIU and for Mullins.
Yeah, definitely. From what I can gather here in my time at Loyola, it seems like Brian has always been the guy that's in Porter's ear that he at least listens to the most. I mean, I know he's come out and said multiple times that every coach in on his staff has like an equal voice and, you know, he's listening to everyone. But as a lot of people, you know, maybe the listeners know, Brian was the guy who, you know, recommended that Andre Jackson start the second half in that Nevada game, which ultimately led to them winning the game. And he just seems right. Like he is ready for a new challenge. I guess my biggest worry would be his connections with the Illinois Wolves prep team, the high school prep team, or the, not prep team, AAU team, and potentially taking or recruiting more efficiently, more effectively those guys, because it seems now, you know, Loyola has some connection with the Wolves, and I'm not too sure if it's because of Mullins and Mullins, Brian's father, who coaches the Illinois Wolves AAU team, or if it's more of just like, you know, it happened that three, you know, Wolves players liked Loyola so much. So I don't know if you do much like recruiting or any of that, like that realm, but it is something that I'm going to be looking at in the future too.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm not an expert in it, but I do follow it a little bit when it comes to the recruiting stuff. And yeah, I mean, if Mullins can keep that pipeline from the Illinois Wolves, that's a really solid AAU program. They've consistently produced good players, as Loyola has benefited from. And if he could bring that to Southern Illinois, first of all, not only would he be getting some good players there, but he's potentially stealing players, or I don't know if stealing is the right word, but you know what I mean, from a conference competitor at Loyola, where that school might have been getting those guys. But instead, if he can get some of those guys to Southern Illinois, it's kind of a double win for that program. And, you know, just, you know, I kind of just looked up his tenure at Loyola. I think it says a lot. He came on as director of basketball operations when Loyola came to the Valley. And then he was promoted after 2 years to assistant coach. And then last year after the Final Four, and he was promoted to associate head coach. So I think it does speak a lot to what Moser thinks of him to sort of promote him through that line. And with all due respect to Matt Gordon, who's sort of been Porter's, you know, longtime right-hand man, I think the fact that he would put Brian Mullins as his associate head coach, it's not a slight to Matt Gordon. I think it says a lot about how highly he views Brian Mullins.
Completely. He has definitely asserted himself at Loyola, and probably soon at SIU or another team, that he has a great basketball mind. So it's going to be exciting to see him. I'll always be following him. You know, I'll root for SIU until they play Loyola, if Mullins is the coach there. But I wanted to shift gears a little bit. I want to talk more about your area of expertise, which is Illinois basketball in general. I saw today you put out your article about the Illinois top team, Chicago top team, kind of like an all-star team. Five best from each region. If you wouldn't mind just kind of giving me a little, and the listeners, a little bit of a rundown of like your blog as a whole, the Catch and Shoot, as well as this article that you put out just today.
Yeah. So in terms of the blog, I mean, the website itself is not nearly as active as it used to be, unfortunately, just because, you know, I don't have as much time working a full-time job in New York. And obviously, since I'm in New York, I don't get as much of an opportunity to actually cover these schools, but I still do have some content up there every now and then. And sometimes my buddy Tim Balk, who is also a Northwestern journalism graduate who still lives in Chicago, he's written a few stories on Loyola for me this year as well. And I know a lot of people have checked them out, which is awesome. But yeah, as far as this article that I posted today on Monday afternoon goes, I saw a few people sort of requesting on Twitter that I go through and pick some like all Illinois teams and all Chicago teams and sort of individual awards. And it's something I'd kind of been thinking about doing anyway. So that just kind of gave me the drive to go actually do it. So yeah, I basically did, it's more or less the same way you see, you know, all conference teams and things like that. I kind of took it the same way, except instead of picking from a conference, I just picked from, I did some awards for all of Illinois. So there are 13 Division I schools in Illinois. So that was the pool of players and coaches that I was choosing from. And then also some for only Chicago. So I took the four schools for Chicago. I consider the four schools in Chicago proper, which are DePaul, Loyola, UIC, and Chicago State. And then I add Northwestern because they are essentially in Chicago, being right outside in Evanston. So yeah, I mean, I did have from Loyola, I had Cameron Crutwig as my Chicago player of the year. As I mentioned before, you know, I thought, with no disrespect to Marcus Towns, that Krubig was the better player on Loyola this year. So I was excited to finally get my chance to sort of explain myself there. Because Krutwig, you know, he led Loyola in, you know, some of the advanced stats that I like to follow in usage, which is basically the percent of possessions that ends with that player being involved in either scoring a turnover or assist. He led them in offensive rebounding rate. He led them in defensive rebounding rate. He led them in block rate. He led them in fouls drawn for 40 minutes. and he was second in offensive rating, only behind Cooper Kafis. And for those who aren't so familiar with advanced stats, generally speaking, it's easier to have a higher offensive rating when you have a lower usage rate. Cooper Kafis, being basically a three-point specialist, had a pretty low usage rate because usually the only time a possession would end with him doing something was when he would shoot a three. He didn't turn it over a lot. He didn't get a lot of assists, things like that. So it's impressive that Krutwig, with a high usage rate, was still second on the team, only behind a very efficient guy like Cooper Kafis. So that's why I ended up going with him for player of the year. I did briefly consider Towns because I, obviously with a lot of people thinking that Towns was the MVC player of the year, I did want to kind of cover my bases, make sure that I didn't have blinders on from my previous opinion that Krutwig was the better player. And what I found when I was looking statistically kind of confirmed that. You know, some other awards that went to Loyola guys, I did have Marcus Towns on the All-Chicago team. Although when I went to the statewide team for all of Illinois, he was the first guy that got cut. I ended up with only Cameron Krutwig as a Loyola representative for the All-Illinois team. Then my Chicago coach of the year was Porter Moser. For that one, it was kind of by default, to be perfectly honest. I mean, Loyola, as we talked about at the top of the podcast, still overall a pretty solid year, winning 20 games in a regular season conference title, but also no one else in Chicago had a winning record this year. A couple of 500 teams, then a couple below 500 teams. So it's pretty easy to pick Porter for that one.
Yeah, it's I enjoyed reading it. And I also just enjoy hearing different like perspectives just because, you know, towards the end of conference was a lot of like, oh, Marcus Towns. One of the reporters for Loyola, Nick Schultz and Tim Edmonds, I believe one of them or maybe even both of them were both on the Krutwig player of the year train. If I would have had a vote, it would have been for Marcus Towns. But, similarly, no disrespect to Cameron Krutwig, they both had really impressive seasons.
I agree. Like they were overall, I mean, they were very even, which is why I think you can make a perfectly valid argument that Marcus Towns is player of the year. And I can make a perfectly valid argument that Cameron Krutwig was player of the year, and we could each basically be right. Like there's no real wrong answer between the two of them. Cause like, even though in a lot of those numbers that I was listing off before where Krutwig led Loyola, Towns was usually second and by a relatively close margin in most of them. So yeah, I mean, in the end, you can really go either way with it.
Yeah, it was an exciting time to watch both those guys play. It was just a bummer that, you know, it didn't seem like a third guy for most of the season didn't want to step up. And that was kind of the Achilles heel of the team, at least in my perspective, of not having a consistent third guy to step up and produce. Thanks for talking about your article. I'm going to link it. I'll tweet it from the account. It's a great read, lots of information there, and also just kind of getting the lowdown on other players throughout the state. It's always fun, at least for me, to read about some of the other teams that I don't, you know, I'm mostly Loyola in the Valley. So reading stuff about guys from NIU or Northwestern, it's always interesting to read other perspectives.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, I mean, it's fun to, like, I know Illinois isn't the best state when it comes to basketball, you know, especially this year. It was back to kind of being a down year after the last year or two had been a lot more interesting, but still a lot of good players in the state. So it's fun to kind of get a chance to highlight some of those guys.
Definitely. And then just kind of changing gears a little bit, talking about skilling. I know it's on a lot of Loyola fans' minds, especially this past year after performing so well, going to the Final Four and all. There's always been this want, at least for Loyola fans, to play DePaul and to play Northwestern. But realistically speaking, having a mid-major team like Loyola going against either Northwestern or DePaul, who both play in high major conference, what is the likelihood that Loyola would be able to schedule a game, be it a home and home or, you know, a 2-for-1 where, you know, they're playing twice at Northwestern before they return home to Loyola. What is the likelihood that Loyola could play one of those two teams, either Northwestern or DePaul in the nearby future?
You know, I would also love to see it. I just think it's good. I think it's good for the city. You know, I think it's great that Northwestern and DePaul continue to play each other every year. And like, I do get why, I'll get into that in a second from the program perspective, why they don't play each other. But I feel like in the end, it's ultimately better for them to play each other and actually get people to care more about Chicago college basketball. But I mean, the reasons they don't, for anyone who's listening, isn't really familiar with the situation, is the idea is basically like, Northwestern and DePaul are historically, you know, they're the top dogs in Chicago college basketball. They're the Big Ten team and the Big East team. They're the teams that are relatively consistently in the top 100 or 120 in the country, even if they're towards the bottom of their conference a lot of the time. In the grand scheme of things, they're still solid programs compared to a mid-major program, more so Northwestern these days than DePaul. But still, DePaul has had some solid years. And so from their perspective, they kind of don't have anything to win they don't have anything to gain from playing Loyola, because it's either they're going to play Loyola and win, and people kind of expect that to happen because you're the Big Ten or the Big East team playing a Missouri Valley team, and you're expected to win those games when you're that type of program, or they lose and it's sort of this big upset and people start to pay more attention to Loyola basketball and you kind of lose your ground, even though you're in a bigger conference, you kind of lose some of that ground as being the alpha dog in the city. That being said, like, I think if Loyola can string together a few more good seasons and really like reach the point where it's like, okay, this team is going to be like a 20-win team every year. They're going to be at least contending for a Valley title and finishing, you know, top 3 or 4 in the Valley every year. Then, you know, you start to like wear away at that. You know, this is an extreme example, but Gonzaga is an example where back when they went on their first couple of NCAA tournament runs, people weren't playing them as much. It's tough to schedule because they went through the same thing that a lot of new majors programs who have some success like Loyola go through. But then you turn out enough of those really good years and you become a perennial top 25 team. And you sort of lose that mid-major status, even though Gonzaga is still in the West Coast Conference. Nobody really considers them a mid-major in the same way, and that opens them up to get some awesome games. Like they played UNC this year, they played Tennessee this year, and like every year they have a few big, high-profile games like that. So, not that Loyola necessarily has become a perennial top 25 team like Gonzaga to get to that point, but I would hope that if Loyola is a consistent top 100 team in the net, which is the NCAA's new tool for that they use on team sheets for NCAA tournament selection and seeding. I would hope that if they become a consistent top 100 team, that Northwestern DePaul would realize, like, you know, it's good for the city. In the end, it's going to be a good win on our resume if we beat them. So let's play them. I would love to see it happen.
Yeah, I would too. It's you know, like you said at the beginning too, like, it would be such a great thing for the city of Chicago to continue to, you know, grow that fan base. I think it would be good for both fan bases to have these city schools play each other. Kind of like I think Iowa for a while did, where, you know, Iowa and Iowa State would play like the other mid-major schools or small schools in Iowa. I think that's now, it does not happen anymore. I think maybe last year or 2 years ago was last year. But it would be cool to see, you know, the 4 or 5 Chicago teams playing each other consistently, whether it's like a small little tournament format or, you know, just a few games each year.
Yeah, I mean, Philadelphia still does the Big Five with, was it Temple, Villanova, St. Joe's, Penn. I'm missing someone. I don't know. Whoever I'm missing, 5 teams, and they still play a round robin every year. And I think something like that would really be awesome for Chicago, or doing a tournament, any sort of thing where you get the teams to play each other. Like, you hear Steve McClain from UIC and Porter Moser consistently say it, and Howard Moore when he was at UIC before Steve McClain said it too. They said they're never going to end this UIC Loyola rivalry because even when UIC hasn't won that game in several years now, but McClain still likes it because, you know, he sees it as it gets people in the city excited about playing basketball in Chicago. And there's so much talent in the city that you need to get local people excited about it, because you have it should be such an edge in recruiting. And we have seen the local schools get a little bit better in the last few years at leveraging sort of the recruiting hotbed that they have locally. But the more excitement you breed about your programs and about actually having an identity of what Chicago basketball is, not necessarily just each individual program, but also sort of the cohesive thing as a whole, about what it means to be a college basketball player in Chicago, the more hype you can build around that, the more guys you can get to stay home. And that is really what a lot of these programs need to sort of take the next level and be more competitive.
Yeah, I know personally speaking, you know, that's always a game that I circle and try to make it a point to whether it's at Loyola or at UIC, to try to make it to, because it's always, they always play with a little bit of an edge. And, you know, sometimes it's guys playing against each other who used to play with each other, or, you know, some guys like, you know, in Lucas Williamson's case at Whitney Young, playing against guys from other city schools. So it's always a fun matchup. And, you know, hopefully in the future, that's something that they can convince Northwestern and Paul to get in on. And you know what, even Chicago State, like, I would be cool to see Loyola schedule Chicago State. I know they're, you know, towards the bottom of 353 teams in, you know, Division I basketball, but that still doesn't mean that, you know, I think they're, if Porter is serious about planning those Northwestern and DePaul games, he should, you know, also give Chicago State a call. So it would be cool to see something develop within the next few years with all the Chicago schools. But I think that's going to do it as far as content goes for this one. Thank you again. Thank you so much for joining me on the podcast. I've definitely been a follower of yours for a couple years now. So where can the listeners find you as far as social media goes?
Yeah. So Twitter is, the Catch and Shoot Twitter handle is catch_n_shoot. Unfortunately, the Catch and Shoot was too long of a Twitter handle back when I made the Twitter account. So it's catch_n_shoot. Go ahead, follow me. Love interacting with fans of Loyola and fans of all the fan bases. I imagine most people listening though are Loyola fans, but like, I always have a good time interacting with you guys. In the end, I just consider myself another college basketball fan. I try not to hold myself above anyone, and I love interacting with anyone, whatever they have to say. So yeah, go ahead, follow me, tweet at me, talk some hoops.
Yeah. Sounds good. I know I have done that in the past, and I'm sure, I hope, as far as Loyola fans go, they don't give you too much crap for putting us. What did you have us in our last? Was it seventh or sixth in the last?
I think I dropped you guys down to sixth because NIU had another really good win against Toledo in the conference tournament. So I think I dropped you guys below NIU. But hey, beat Creighton tomorrow night, and you'll move right on back up into the top five.
All right, you heard it here first, listeners. Got Creighton, and then we'll move up the board. Thank you again. Thanks for joining me on the podcast. This has been the first special edition episode of Podcast 63. Thanks for listening, and go Blairs.